You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, May 6, 2016. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. I've got my soft-collared shirt on. Took an opt-out on the shower this morning. Rolled out of bed late. It is so casual. And joining us today, as he does almost every Friday, certainly those when we are experiencing good fortune, Cliff Schechter will be here to look back on the biggest news of the stories of the week of the, you know. Also on the program today, well, I guess Film Guy Matthew's not going to be here. He told me that an hour ago. We'll have him next week. So maybe we'll just talk about how good the Americans episode was the other night.
That show's so good.
So good. Also on the program today, new documents show Joe Paterno in Penn State knew about Jerry Sandusky's pedophilia decades ago.
They don't make them like that anymore. Bring back Joe. Do we love him? Am I right?
Supreme Court of the United States set to crush anti-corruption laws centered around the case of Bob Probe. What was it? What we called him? Vaginal Probe McDonald?
Bob McDonald. No, but Vaginal Probe was the Attorney General.
I don't know. I think he
Cuccinelli.
Was.
Probably were both.
Also on the program today, documents further indict Purdue Pharmaceuticals in the opioid addiction epidemic we have around the country. Massive recall of frozen fruits and veggies expands after a listeria outbreak. And Donald Trump ripping apart the Republican Party, at least for the moment. We'll talk about that with Cliff. And on the Democratic side, we're not hearing calls for Bernie Sanders to drop out. We'll discuss perhaps why. Do I have a sound sheet? I don't have a sound sheet.
My computer crashed. I'm getting it to you in a second.
My dog ate my sound sheet, ladies and gentlemen. Right. Let me remind people about our advertising policy here on this program before I get to this story about the massive recall and what's going on with opioids. I don't generally take ads from organizations or I should say businesses that I feel uncomfortable with that either represent something that I am ideologically against or think is an industry that does not necessarily benefit society particularly much. I mean, you know, we talk about razors on this program. I just think they're fairly benign unless they're in the hands of a child. And I found a good razor company, and so I'm happy to promote that. A betting company, same deal. Recruitment company, if you're looking for someone to hire, exactly the same thing. But We've had businesses about sort of crowdsourcing loans. I'm not comfortable with that. I don't want to get involved in anything that could actually cause people to lose money or that has like sort of strange regulatory issues. I'm not going to promote gold or, you know, male vitality elixirs unless I'm convinced they work.
Or fantasy sports betting.
Or fantasy sports betting. You know, at first I did, but when it became clear that was problematic, I'm done with that. And if there's an organization who shares, let's say, a different political ideology than mine, I'd be open to it, particularly if I think that it's, you know, healthy for people to get introduced to this stuff. You know, in the same way that I hope one day, if Myla, let's say my child wants to try drugs, that she does so in the auspices of my home and under my supervision, as opposed to going out and, you know, buying booze and driving or getting high and buying, you know, crappy pot from somewhere or just putting yourself in a position. So I sort of subscribe to that notion. And I just want to make that clear right now. Now, of course, this program supports itself more than primarily on memberships from members. And you can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. But I want to just talk about two quick stories. One is this story about this massive listeria outbreak. It is a multi-state listeria outbreak. It's prompting a massive recall of frozen fruits and vegetables sold under 42 different brands. At least 8 people across the country have taken ill. It's a food packaging state packaging company in Washington State has expanded a voluntary recall, which at one time just included 11 products and encompasses nearly 360 different organic and non-organic frozen fruits and vegetables that may be contaminated with the deadly Listeria monocytogenes bacteria. I didn't spell that right. Now, that is very good of that company to do a voluntary recall. And that voluntary recall started in April. Why did that voluntary recall start in April? It was because the outbreak was first identified in March by the CDC and the Ohio Agricultural Department. Two government agencies that, and the FDA, agencies that I definitely have problems with at the time because they're corrupted by corporate influence. But at least they're there, because who else would do this? Is there a market incentive for that distributor to go out and create a system that would measure state to state, nationwide, cases of listeria to see if they could trace it back to them? Or could they just get away with not doing that? Now, of course, they voluntarily recall once there is a government agency that says, we got a problem here. You guys have an opportunity to do a voluntary recall. Yeah, we'll do it because we know what happens next if we don't. You go to the press. And I just wanted to make that point clear. And there's another point that also, we see this is where trial lawyers come in, but also the fact, this next story about Purdue Pharmaceuticals, the makers of OxyContin. Purdue Pharmaceuticals has known about the addiction problems involving OxyContin for decades. For decades. Even before OxyContin, according to a LA Times investigation, even before OxyContin went on the market, clinical trials showed that many patients weren't getting 12 hours of relief. And what that did is it promoted addiction. Since the drug's debut in 96, the company has been confronted with additional evidence, including complaints from doctors, reports from its own sales reps, and independent research that because it didn't provide 12 hours of relief in the way that it was prescribed, it was going to create addiction. The company has held fast to the claim of the 12-hour relief in part to protect its revenue. OxyContin's market dominance and high price, up to hundreds of dollars per bottle, hinge on its 12-hour duration. Without that, it offers little advantage over less expensive painkillers. This company has made billions and billions of dollars on OxyContin. And there are lawsuits from states, attorney generals, helped by private tort lawyers, trial lawyers, where they have gotten millions of dollars of fines. Do you see the problem there, folks? Billions in revenue, millions in dollars of fine, or what we also call around here operating costs. And when they presented their own data to the FDA, which is the way that these drugs get approved, because of course we don't give enough money to these agencies to be independent enough to do this on their own, they sort of, you know, hemmed and hawed a little bit. We'll show you one study, but we're not going to show you the other. This is the study that proves that what we got is safe. My point being that without any of these regulatory bodies, it would be far worse. Because the idea that somehow the market corrects in these situations is ludicrous. Ludicrous. It is an absurd fantasy. I want to take a moment to introduce you to our sponsor, libertarianism.org. Libertarianism.org is the premier resource for learning about the theories, principles, and histories of free societies. Their site has podcasts, videos, free books, classic reprints, and insights from experts past and present. Libertarianism.org is great for those of you who are skeptical that there's one way of doing things. I mean, why not err on the side of more freedom? Some respect for what makes us different. Learn more about the idea of using a little more liberty at libertarianism.org. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, the great Cliff Schechter.
The songs we used to sing, sung them in so long. I'll sing one with you now. First, tell me how much I get for biting my tongue. I kept my mouth shut, but still I got stung. So, all gone. How do you do it? You put your face. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday, and it is a tradition around these parts on every Friday, before we light the candles on Casual Shabbat, to welcome to the program sort of my political rabbi, maybe. Maybe I could say that, a Rebbe. About 2,000 years ago in Yavna, this song was written about him. Let's play it now.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Hello, Cliff, and welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I especially enjoyed that introduction today. I would like to see the new ways you will shake it up.
Well, you know, we're having to go far afield. There's been so many introductions. Sometimes it gets
tricky. Why you have to go so far afield?
Why is that?
Because even though we forgot to do it, forgot about it, sometime in the mid to late April region was my 5-year anniversary of coming on this show.
Holy cow. Wow.
Uh-huh. Isn't that crazy? It was so cool that everybody forgot.
Wow.
I feel like I should get something. I don't know, maybe a set of steak knives or something?
Yeah. Well, there's a sticker in your future, man. There is a bumper sticker in your future.
Sort of like I voted kind of thing. I went on Sam's show.
Indeed. Five for like 500 times.
Exactly.
But you know what we haven't done, Cliff? We haven't talked since Donald Trump became the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party. And what was, you know, and I don't know anybody who predicted he would become the nominee per se, but when he first announced, but you know, to a certain extent,
when he first announced, I think you're right. I think to totally toot our own horns, I think we sort of understood where this thing was going, at least a lot sooner than people that just kept denying it. I thought and I feel pretty comfortable with this. I thought it would come down to those two, and Cruz would pull it out in the end, being the better red pandering to the religious sorts and that kind of thing. I think we had that conversation somewhere back in like January, February, maybe longer ago. And I thought, so I can't say that I predicted Trump. I can say that I thought it would be Cruz. I thought Trump would do well. And the one thing I know I can say, which leaves me laughing at so many of these guys, is that from the very first moment he announced, I said, in my estimation, there was almost no way that it was going to be Jeb Bush, no matter how much money he raised.
Well, you know, here's a clip. I want to play this clip just to kick this off, because this is just an unbelievable clip. Back in on June 26th of 2016. No, when
15?
It was July 26th, 15.
All right, so July 26th of 2015. Representative Keith Ellison is on ABC this week, and just to give you a sense, it is Matthew Dowd, Republican strategist Anna Navarro, Maggie Haberman, who covers presidential New York Times, and Stephanopoulos, and here is Keith Ellison. Now I will say that in June of 2015, I tweet this YouTube out with some regularity. Because I'm so proud of myself. But I had said that Donald Trump was going to be very dangerous to the Republican Party. And here's Keith Ellison saying, people should pay attention to this because he could really win. And listen to the reaction to Keith Ellison on this.
I hope Keith Ellison just plays this on a loop on his website.
No kidding. Really listen to this. This is unbelievable.
All I want to say is that anybody from the Democratic side of the fence who's terrified of the possibility of President Trump, better vote, better get active, better get involved, because this man has got some momentum, and we better be ready for the fact that he might be leading the Republican ticket.
Next, I know you don't believe that, but I want to go on to Method
Dad. Sorry to laugh.
Next week, you know, George, we had Jesse Ventura in Minnesota win the governorship. Nobody thought he was going to win. I'm telling you, stranger things have happened.
Well, and also, George, also.
Sorry to laugh. Sorry. Let me laugh in your face, Congressman. You're part of the Progressive Caucus, aren't you?
We never had an actor run for president and win before.
Right, right, right.
We never had a guy pretend he had a pickup truck and his whole background was acting in side roles in action movies named Fred Thompson when intended. I mean, come on.
Donald Trump? You know? Excuse me. Donald Trump as the nominee of the Republican Party? That's like Sarah Palin being the vice presidential nominee 8 years ago.
I mean, that's the thing. And right. So I will be proud of us because you and I know we'd agreed on this. I remember never dismissed that from the beginning. I thought he would be a factor. I thought he would get some of the nationalist types, especially as his message got clear on immigration and what he really, you know, what he was playing to, that he'd win some of the sort of nationalist types. He'd appeal to some angry working class white voters. And I thought he would probably easily would outdo Jeb and probably outdo most of the rest of them. Now, I admit I gave Marco Rubio too much credit, as I think some did, and I thought Ted Cruz would be the last man standing. So I'm not trying to sit here and claim that I got it right. All exactly right. But, I mean, these people that thought that this was the Republican Party of 1988, and, well, Jeb Bush with his finer mannerisms
right.
and his good golf game,
right,
and his
exactly.
well-timed wit should be able to – I mean, this is – you know, this was so far from that party that – that, you know, that I wouldn't have said 8 years ago that I thought it would be Ted Cruz. But that shows you, because I think Ted Cruz is every bit as dangerous and sometimes maybe even slightly more than Donald Trump. So, I mean, you know, that's where I thought this party was at this point, that they had captured it. We had seen it. We talked about this numerous times. They had people on commercials in statewide races in blue states disavowing that they were witches, for Christ's sake. You know, they had people talking about crazy theories of rape and not getting pregnant when raped and things. I mean, you know, if you can do that statewide in purple and blue states as a Republican and get the nomination, I think that we had some pretty good hints that this was the kind of thing that was coming. And from the past few years and from the who took over that party even more so in 2010 and 2014 with those huge waves. So, you know, the egg's on their face and they should all be embarrassed. They won't be, and I'm sure they'll predict wrong things again. But, There you go.
Well, all right. So let's talk about there's a couple of things I want to talk about. I mean, Paul Ryan apparently was not prepared for Trump to be to the presumptive nominee after the day after Indiana. So he has not officially endorsed. You've got guys like Mitt Romney and the Bushies who say they're not going to attend the convention. But for the most part, it seems, you know, there's a couple of people, John Sass, whatever that guy's name is,
Ben Sass, from
Nebraska. He looks like he's going to try and brand himself as the guy who was not with Trump looking, you know, 4-8 years down the road. Because I think, you know, everybody's trying to position themselves as to how they can best achieve a political.
He's very Cotton and Cruz-esque in his politics. So, you know, he's who knows, maybe he'll even be the one that agrees in the end to run as a third party conservative if they don't just all go and say they're going to vote for Gary Johnson.
I want to talk about that, too. This notion of, like, you know, Mary Matlin now has signed the libertarian. This is we're going to see the big libertarian push now, because that's what they do when they know they're not going to get into the White House. That's why there was so much more libertarian stuff, like 3 years ago. And now you don't see the push. It's just coming back now because they all thought that, you know, Jeb Bush is back in town. And so libertarianism, we don't need you anymore. Oh, now we're in exile. We've got to come up and redress this pig and put different lipstick on it.
You know, the thing is that why I think we've been able to get this right more than wrong is because we haven't sort of played the game of he said, she said, you know, everybody's equal. both sides do it, and I've actually looked at where the incentives are and realized that, you know, what used to hold people back, which were not laws, they were more customs, traditions, expected norms, have fallen apart. So if you then look at the just the purest form of capitalism, which is sort of ironic considering that's what these guys have always said they loved so much, where the incentives are, where are the economic incentives? There's huge incentives for a lot of them to get behind Gary Johnson. More time on certain TV stations, you know, consultants hired who get to spend all, you know, get to spend all sorts of money on TV ads and things if people give money. You know, for those who have reasons to want to undermine Trump, because obviously if he takes over the party, there's certain other conservatives who, at least if they're out in the wilderness with Hillary Clinton, they're out in the wilderness. Everybody on the right is. But if Trump wins now, the people that have willing to sell themselves to Trump, your Chris Christies, if you will be on the inside. And a lot of the people that are usually on the inside will be on the outside. So they have reasons to go with Gary Johnson, undermine Trump so he loses, so they still keep their place in the hierarchy. Again, remember the sort of status and what status always ends up leading to, financial incentives of a lot of these people. And that's where the people in the Republican Party, a lot of them, as you and I have discussed before, the incentives will be to get behind Trump.
Yep.
Mitch McConnell, people like that. So they'll get behind him. But some of these other people will break away because that will be a motivating factor.
And you know,
ask what's his name, Frank Luntz, how much money he made off of Ross Perot.
Right.
Way back when.
And Paul Ryan is going to be an interesting thing because Paul Ryan, of course, is angling for 2020 or 2024. I mean, these are young people. Ted Cruz, 2020, 2024. These are all just sort of, you know, this is the way it works.
They're all early to mid. Well, they're mid 40s.
Yeah.
Right. And they've got time to. I mean, I think they would all think, you know, which is not completely off from reality. I don't think we have a large enough sample to talk, speak from. So I think sometimes I see large generalizations I don't think are valid. But it is hard for one party to continually win the White House, even if it's a party favored by a majority, a solid majority of people, and the other party has tried to commit demographic death through 1,000 cuts. Because
right.
It's a simple thing is at some point you're going to get sick of the party in power, and unless these parties break up, and there's three of them, you really only have one other choice. And so if you're thinking this way and you're looking through history, you're saying, well, Hillary Clinton would be the third term of the same party. That doesn't happen that often. And she's older. And so who knows what her health will be like. And 2020 would look very promising to a bunch of these 45, 46-year-olds.
Right. And even 2024, for that matter. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about and so we're going to yet to be seen about where Paul Ryan will fall on this, but the point I made last night,
he
eventually
comes around.
I think so too. But even the fact that he's hesitated is a problem because I was on Hayes last night talking about this notion. Now Hillary Clinton has already released some ads attacking Trump, and now she's not the. She's not the nominee yet, but I don't have a problem with either Democrat at this point taking their time to attack Trump.
Forget either Democrat. I don't have a problem with anybody in the world
taking
their time to attack Donald Trump.
And,
everyone should just join in.
And the problem with Ryan even hesitating is basically the message is, you know, if even the leader of their party thinks that Donald Trump is dangerous and perhaps not qualified to be president, how could they convince your average voter that he is? And the fact is that the rest of the country does not have this sort of, and sadly in my mind, but this great animosity towards Paul Ryan that you see in the swamps, the fever swamps of the Republican
right.
Party. And so And there'll be plenty of time going forward to talk about Donald Trump's record and how I think there are certain sectors of people that that have misinterpreted and attributed certain positions to him that are not accurate. But how would you? And this is the question that I was asked last night. How would you attack Donald Trump at this point? And I think the ads that Clinton has put out have been very, very effective. And there's two of them. One is the party of Trump and the other is the unifier. And I think this is really smart because I think there should be no Democrat right now that is not outsourcing this to the Republicans because they have been so critical of Trump and Trump is
right.
so laughable that I think it's honestly beneath a serious candidate at this point to address Trump directly. And this is going to segue into our talk about the Senate races. But I think the idea here is to either force the Republicans to fuse themselves with Trump, or to force them from, or drive a wedge between them. And this is the first ad. The GOP, it's entitled GOP is the Party of Trump. And this is what I'm so ecstatic about this, because this is what you and I were talking about 6 to 8 months ago. Like, the Democrats should be doing this from day one. Donald Trump is the perfect bludgeon over the Republicans. Here is that ad. Little graphics here, saying that
they're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists. I'll use the word anchor baby. This is a country where we speak English, not Spanish.
You're going to have a deportation force.
I will get rid of gun-free zones on schools. My first day, it gets signed.
A total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
Do you still believe that Muslims should be banned from entering the country until we can figure out what's going on, as you've said?
Yes, we have to find out what the hell is going on.
What do you think of what we're... I said it's fine. And if we want to go stronger, I'd go stronger too.
When you get these terrorists, you have to take out their families.
Bomb the shit out of them.
Maybe Syria should be a free zone for ISIS.
Can you tell the Middle East we're not using a nuclear weapon?
I would never say that. I would never take any of my cards off the table.
How about Europe?
I'm not going to take it off the table.
You might use it in Europe?
He appeared to mock a reporter with a disability.
I don't remember.
Planned Parenthood should absolutely be defunded.
How do you ban abortion?
You'll go back to a position like they had, where people will perhaps go to illegal places.
Should the woman be punished for having an abortion?
There has to be some form of punishment.
Will you condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or other white supremacists?
I don't know anything about white supremacists, so I don't know.
Knock the crap out of him, would you?
Like to punch him in the face.
Everything I say I'm going to do, folks, I do, okay? Believe me.
Pretty effective stuff.
Sure.
And
then if you're smart, what you do is you break it down, that ad, and you put it in Ohio against Rob Portman and Missouri against Roy Blunt, and you put it against, you know, the various Republicans running for open Senate seats in places like Indiana and Florida and Nevada, and I can go on and on. I mean, I'd say Ron Johnson, I almost don't even think we have to bother with that one, because I think Russ Feingold is going to clean his clock. Ayotte up in New Hampshire. I mean, you use this video, I mean, mocking people who are disabled, misogynistic things about women. I mean, the stuff this guy has said and done, I just said something recently, I think, I mean, not that I'm, this should be shocking, but his disapproval rating among Hispanic voters is 89%.
That's pretty high. Now we should say it's pretty high, but people should also be aware that some of the best taco bowls in the Western Hemisphere come from the Trump Tower Grill. And
you know why that is.
In yesterday, that's I got home
to Hispanics.
I got home yesterday, and I walked through the door, and the first thing that my daughter, my 10-year-old daughter, said, okay, was, did you see this thing? It is all over Instagram, because that's her outlet, where Donald Trump is saying that he loves Hispanics and happy Cinco de Mayo because he's eating a taco bowl. Now, right. My 10-year-old gets this message. And
this is why I feel very confident. And again, if I end up being wrong about this eventually, maybe you guys won't be able to blame me, because none of us will be here. This is why I feel quite confident he's going to lose in a general election, which is very different than a primary, which was a completely different audience. Now, the caveat, as I've always said, and I always say on these things, is crazier things have happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's wars, and there's terrorism, and there's economic crashes, and there's natural disasters, there's indictments, there's live boy, dead girl, and there's all sorts of things that can change that equation. I always say all things being equal, and they're not always going to be.
Right.
But unless something in a major way changes the trajectory, the thing is you get these guys who are going there, who are just going there for a paycheck. Paul Manafort is a great example, every dictator's best friend, if you read that.
I'm digging into that piece right now, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing who the guys that he's lined up next to. So there are people who are lined up next to him for a paycheck who are still actually considered to be, and it tells you how corrupt the Republican establishment is, that you can be in the Republican establishment and you can actually then, while you're doing that, be trying to help a dictator win an election in the Ukraine and help him side with Putin and attack U.S. national security, and you're still allowed to be in the Republican establishment, which is what Manafort, among many other things, was doing. But point being is they can claim that, oh, we're going to make him act more presidential. He can't. I believe he can hold back to a certain degree from doing the completely over-the-top ridiculous stuff, but he's at heart a cheesy used car salesman. That is what he is. He is not very bright. He is not. He has no self-awareness. And so he doesn't understand why that tweet he sent out yesterday would be something that would get people, especially people who are Hispanic, who actually, you know, understand what food is and what food they make in places like Mexico, and that the Trump Tower does not make it better, and things like that. Like, he's going to say so many tone-deaf things and offend so many people because he can't stop saying, I'm the best. So Trump Tower is the best at everything. Even things that, I mean, he's going to always say, I'm the best.
But even if he could, here's the dilemma he has. Even if he could, even if he could change his demeanor into Jeb Bush tomorrow, which I agree with you, I don't think he probably can. But even if he could, the problem then becomes, where's the thing that initially provided him his luster? I mean, that's right. What he's selling. He's not selling any policy positions. He has changed his policy positions multiple times over the. All he has been selling is a disposition, and that
that's
is
right.
And
he's and, so deeply
and I will say
Sam.
A disposition and also the sort of like, you know, the reflection of racism, the fishy odor smell that you get after you cook fish that lingers around that he calls anti-PC, all that stuff. Because if he doesn't tweet that tweet, nobody's talking about him other than other issues. I mean, he is, and the problem is that. And this is what I think, like, you know, still why you had those people laughing at Keith Ellison the other day, or I should say months ago. The conservative mindset has been trained to be just has been trained to have this disposition, and normal people reject it. They just look at it to the extent that they're interested. They look at it like a freak show. There's a reason why Fox is consistently rated number one in news, and there's two reasons behind it, actually. One is because conservatives are just simply they're living a Masada lifestyle where they think they're constantly under attack from heathens.
Right.
And
let's call it an alternative lifestyle.
Yeah, and two is there's a huge segment of liberals and normal people who rubberneck. I mean, who like to watch the freak show. And
that doesn't mean you want him to be president. It's a traffic accident,
right?
It doesn't mean you respect it. Fox doesn't win ratings on respectability. Neither does the WWE. You know, I mean, you're getting ratings on the fact that people have to see what it is that this craziness is that's happening. And that's exactly what Donald Trump is.
Yep.
People aren't watching because they're like, I want to see what brilliant thing. I mean, sometimes, sometimes you turn on an Obama speech because you want to see what he's going to say because his oration is so impressive. You don't do that with Donald Trump. You want to see, is he gonna wave his arms around and make fun of somebody who's disabled?
Right.
Is he going to make a grotesquely racist statement? Is he going to ban a new group of people from the country? What is it he's going – I mean, which is what reality TV is. That's what he is the embodiment of. And the thing is that he's so appealing to so many of these white men who feel dispossessed that we're talking about is because he feels dispossessed. He has the very same deep insecurities about so many things. He claims not to have all the boasting, all the whatever is to make up for his emptiness inside. So a classic example is yesterday, all Paul Ryan had to do was say, I'm not ready to support him yet. And a normal person would keep their mouth shut who's trying to consolidate the party. But Trump can't do that.
Right.
He doesn't know how to do that. So he responds and insults Paul Ryan, calls him unfit to be speaker, and now there's maybe a longer fight that's going to go on there. This is what's going to happen with every single time something like that comes up. He can't help himself. He's a cheesy used car salesman. It is what he is, and he's deeply insecure and must strike back at anybody 1,000 times worse than he thinks they've hit him. So then when you ask me, that kind of is a great segue into, you know, where we started all this. You ask me how I'd run against him. Yeah, I would be doing what those ads are you're doing right now. But also, you know, Karl Rove got this sort of reputation, which I always just annoyed the hell out of me, as if he was some genius who came up with the idea of going after somebody's strength. It's what you do in any contest you're in with people, whether it's a debate, whether it's an election, whatever it is. Whether you're playing basketball and it's two teams against you, you try to eliminate the other team's strength to create a situation where you can win. So what is it that Trump, what is it that, you know, that has gotten some appeal for him? He's pretended that he's this smart businessman and he's this tough guy. I would, you know, whenever they hit him on Trump University and they hit him on Trump Air and Trump Stakes, you start seeing him lose it. And so the simple thing would be I would go after him. I mean, bankruptcies would be part of it and all. I mean, the first day of the Republican convention is when they're going to – when this legal case in New York about the people that were ripped off by Trump University.
Right.
I would have people out there attacking him constantly, calling him weak, calling him a failed businessman, calling him sad, calling him pathetic. He will lose his mind. And he
I'll tell you something. Before,
in such an over-the-top way.
Before that happens, though, in my opinion – and I think it's you use these ads where you have Republicans. Here's another ad. OK, here's another ad.
But this is going to get him to react to these two ads because he can't stand it because you have out there. You watch. If he hasn't said something about Hillary already, he will.
But more importantly,
insulting it.
More importantly, I think you use the predicate like this ad right here. I want to play this ad and then I want to tell you what I'm thinking afterwards. Here's this.
Yep,
this is another ad. This is put out by a Clinton supporting PAC. And this is Trump the unifier, the idea being basically that he has unified the Republican Party. They all think he's a lunatic, which, of course, is not the case now. But nevertheless, this still has resonance. Number six.
We're going to be a unified party.
He is a con artist.
A phony.
Donald Trump is the know-nothing candidate.
Donald is a bully.
This is an individual who mocked a disabled reporter.
I don't remember!
Who attributed a reporter's questions to her menstrual cycle.
Blood coming out of her, whatever.
The most vulgar person to ever aspire to the presidency.
The man who seems to only feel big when he's trying to make other people look small.
Don't worry about it, little Margo.
Gentlemen, the man is utterly amoral.
It's a sign of deep insecurity and weakness.
The bullying, the greed, the showing off.
I'm really rich.
The misogyny, the absurd third grade theatrics.
Count to ten, Donald. Count to ten.
He's a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot.
A narcissist at a level I don't think this country's ever seen.
He would not be the commander-in-chief we need to keep our country safe.
This guy is so unfit to be commander-in-chief.
His domestic policies would lead to recession. His foreign policies would make America and the world less safe.
I bring people together.
Now,
I love this.
Now, I mean, that's a great...
You didn't play the Jeb Bush thing at the end. I love that.
It's a great ad. It's a great ad. And but the bottom line is, what should happen next, in my opinion? The Democratic nominee, or both the ones running for the nomination at this point, should begin to actually attack not Trump, but the rest of the Republican Party, to call them out. Like, will Paul Ryan endorse Donald Trump? Will Mitt Romney endorse Donald Trump? Will, and some of them have answered it already, but they should just go straight down the line. They should go with the entire Republican leadership. They should go with every person who ran for office. They should go with every person running for Congress. I mean, they should fuse. They should take this opportunity to allow the Republicans to do their work for them, or to fuse themselves with Donald Trump.
I think you go all the way down to the state legislature.
Honestly.
I think everybody in the Republican Party should have to answer for whether they support this guy. And if they say they do, that doesn't mean you let it go. Then you remind people again and again and again that they say they did. If they think that's going to defuse it, no, you don't.
Right, and then you take it issue by issue. Do you agree with him on this? Do you agree with him on that? Do you agree with him on this? Well, then what is it that, why are you supporting him? I mean, you basically just, you completely attack the scaffolding. I mean, you've got Hillary Clinton out there trying to, Clinton folks raising money or attempting to raise money from Republican donors. I don't know that they will do that, and I wouldn't be surprised if some Republican donors have already, you know, the type of people who have already given to Hillary Clinton, for that matter. But what it does is it begins to destabilize, like, the entire infrastructure that this guy is running on. And
well, look, I mean, their last nominee won't endorse him and over Hillary and is not going to the convention. Their last two presidents won't endorse him over Hillary and aren't going to the convention. I mean, and frankly, here's another prediction. I'm not ready to make it really, but I think there's a good shot John McCain loses his seat over this. He's so screwed in Arizona. There's just not much he can do, and he's running against somebody who is too conservative for my taste on the issues, Kirkpatrick, but she's a really good candidate, which he's proven in a House seat that is more Republican, much more Republican than it is Democratic, and she's found a way to win it again and again and again. And she's already proven it. She's going after him.
She already put that ad out. She was the first one to actually do
the... She's not going to let him... She's made it clear she's not going to let him hide from this. And he's already said he'll support whoever the Republican nominee. He can't win either way. He'll lose a segment either way. I think he's in a lot of trouble.
That's what people don't understand is, you know, I had people who said to me, like, well, there may be people who don't like Trump Republicans, but they're going to come out and they'll just not vote for Trump and they'll vote down the party line or whatnot. But the problem is that if the Democrats do this properly, they make Trump a liability one way or another to the candidate. I mean, so that it actually hurts them. Not that people just vote party line, that it actually hurts. So John McCain was one of the early victims of these ads where it was basically, here's Trump. He says X, Y, and Z. And here's John McCain. Oh, you have it? Let's play it. We've played it before, but let's play it now.
Donald Trump is dangerous for America.
I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
I would bring back a hell of a lot worse than waterboarding.
But no matter what Donald Trump says, John McCain would support him for president.
Including Donald Trump, you would support him?
Oh, yeah. She said he's a pussy.
Like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
Donald Trump.
You could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever.
Even Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is distancing himself from Donald Trump. Not John McCain, even after Trump said...
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
McCain repeated...
I vote for the Republican nominee. Obviously, I am a loyal Republican.
There was a time when country mattered more than his political party. But 30 years in Washington have changed John McCain. We need leaders to stand up to Donald Trump.
I'm Ann Kirkpatrick, and I approve this message.
Forgive the tasteless joke, but when you hear John McCain say, I will vote for the Republican nominee, like, you wonder if the visual where he isn't blinking out SOS with his eyes, right? I mean, that was so reminiscent of him being held prisoner. And that's basically what it is. And so we're going to see more of this. All right, we're up against it, but we have no film guy this week, so we have a little bit of time. Right now, the Republicans have a 54-46 advantage in the House. In the Senate, 46 making up two independents, Sanders and I can't remember the second one is, but nevertheless, from Maine, King, and. And so you need a flip of four seats. The only seat that is open where there's no incumbent running for Democrats is Nevada. And there is what is the percentage of Latino voters in Nevada? Extremely high.
It's why, you know, following New Mexico and the similar trajectory, it flew past, you know, Ohio and other swing states that stayed swing and went from being a lean Republican state and within, you know, two election cycles went to fully to lean Democratic to almost safe Democratic, which is where New Mexico pretty much is. And yeah, I think they're going to have a, you know, if you think about it, and that's the thing in Arizona on top of that, which makes it like Nevada, the huge Hispanic population there. Because John McCain has always been able to, in more recent years anyhow, as the Hispanic population has grown, he's been able to win there by appealing to that population and not being a lunatic. And that's going to be taken away from him now.
Right.
So I agree with you. I think basically you've got the sort of first tier of seats. I would say right now I think Ron Johnson and Mark Kirk are pretty much gone no matter what they do.
Yeah, Mark Kirk being Illinois and Ron Johnson being Wisconsin. And
I think
it's fine.
Ron Johnson is way too conservative, and Feingold is way too good a candidate
right.
in a state that leans Democratic 6, 7, 8 points. And in Illinois, you know, in a normal election, Democrats win by 12 or 14. This election, they could win by closing in on 20. I don't see Mark Kirk splitting that many tickets. I'm sorry. No matter how moderate he's portraying himself, and he is more, you know, as close to a moderate as there is left in that party on abortion rights and guns and some things. But
he won't kick his own son out of the house for being gay.
That's right, which is a good big step up. But I think you go to that next level, which is that second. I'd still say first tier, but ones that aren't sort of gimmies. New Hampshire, Ohio,
Pennsylvania.
I think those become incredibly difficult for them to hold on to and start falling. And then I think you're headed to that next tier. Grassley has, you know, on the Supreme Court thing, has lost 30 points in his approval rating and is now in trouble with a former lieutenant governor running against him. Look at the perfect storm. You want one that I would, you know, the Democrats actually have had a recruiting failure, which it wouldn't even be on my list, which is they've got a state rep running against Burr in North Carolina. But now, instead of North Carolina being a lean Republican state, Trump, first of all, maybe takes that state by himself and makes it a lean Democratic state. Now add in their crazy governor and the whole thing going on with the bathrooms and his falling approval rating and his utterly idiotic statements he's making on radio and TV, businesses pulling out of there. So you've got a female candidate essentially taking on that, you know, running in a race where you've got against Burr, where he's going to have to fight the headwinds of Trump and the governor's reelection, because they have their reelection this year, as well as the fact that the person running on the Democratic side, Roy Cooper, is a couple-term attorney general who supposedly is a very, very good politician. So, you know, I mean, there's you have to start looking at those kinds of races. Missouri.
Right.
Which normally a lean Republican state, and Blunt would be in pretty good shape. A presidential year, and then a presidential year with Trump at the top, and a decent Democratic candidate, at least from what I've heard.
Yeah, that Secretary of State, supposedly.
Indiana.
Yep. Indiana.
Indiana is suddenly an open seat. And again, that would be a seat that would lean their way pretty heavily. This year, I think it's open. I think that change. I mean, I honestly think you start looking at, instead of picking up four, maybe five seats and sort of, you know, either or 3 to 5 and either barely being in the minority still or barely being in the majority, you start looking at seriously a potential for 8 to 10 seats.
What about Florida?
There's another one. And you have to start factoring the Hispanic vote in there, too. And from what I've seen, there's supposedly the Democrats, you know, on the Democratic side, obviously, we have to see what happens with Murphy and Grayson.
Right.
Well, it complicates things a little bit. I know I like Grayson's politics a lot better, certainly. But I still think, what are they going to have to fight against there? I mean, I think their approval rating, you know, they usually, because of the Cuban population in Florida, they usually, among the Hispanic vote there, get something like 40%, 45%. That's how they've been able to win in Florida. I think the poll I just saw of Trump's approval rating in Florida among Hispanic voters was 18%. Making it higher than that 11% he has nationally. But there you go.
And what's fascinating to watch is, like, you can almost see or actually track what polls Trump has looked at that day. Okay, because so he let's just take Florida, for example. He realizes, like, oh, my God, I'm going to have a problem in Florida. Yeah, okay, Puerto Rico restructure their debt because he thinks that's going to help him down in Florida. But he's basically flailing around, like taking whatever position set the Republican Party sort of like broadly embraces. And on any given day, he's jumping on like four different sides of it. Like literally, did you guys just squirming around? I think there's going to have to be something that, you know, guys like Paul Ryan, guys like Mark Levin, and I include Republican politicians with right-wing radio host because
Glenn Beck.
Yeah, well, Glenn Beck, I think he's gone. He's not. He's never going to get on the train. But guys like Levin.
Oh, I thought you were saying the people that won't. You're saying the people he needs to get on board.
Well, I think the ones that will. Yeah. Because I think, like, you know, Levin right now is screaming. You know, 2 days ago he was like, this is the, yeah, Donald Trump is a scumbag. He's not a constitutionalist. And then, you know, yesterday he was like, well, let's just see what he provides us.
Right. And good buddies with Hannity. My guess is Hannity will get him aboard.
Well, I think this is what it's going to be. They're all going to come up with some litmus test, whether it's Bill Kristol or Levin or Paul Ryan. And I think that litmus test is going to be him coming out with a list of five Supreme Court justices that he would appoint, or 10, you know, a list of 10 people that the Heritage Foundation gives him. And that's going to be the thing that they all go, we can't let Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders be president. And so, and the fact that he has come out with this list of people from the Heritage Foundation, I can sign on. I can hold my nose and vote for him. That's the way it's going to work. You know, and it's not a terribly different, dissimilar dynamic that we have around this office, frankly, on the Democratic side. But
right.
This is something that, you know, I've been saying this from day one, whereas, you know, you're going to see Levin and all these people who said that he was a fascist, even John Kasich, who was basically saying this is Mussolini. Well, he's Mussolini, but he doesn't have an accent.
He's Mussolini in one of his better days.
Right.
You know.
So it's going to be just fascinating. Then the next 2 months are going to be just bizarre because...
No, I mean, right here, for example, you know, because, I mean, I can give you an example. It's all over the papers. Because Portman wasn't quick enough to say he wouldn't consider being Trump's VP. And so immediately Ted Strickland, the Democratic nominee, hit him. And it's all over the place. And now he's got to, now Portman has found himself off message, having to go out and make sure to reassure that he would never consider being Trump's. So his name and Trump are being shared in the same sentence with him on TV, on local TV, in all of the major papers. Because of this, the liability of having this guy's name floating around.
Right. And if Portman is successful, if he's successful in distancing himself from Trump, he has sunk Trump in Ohio. And
right.
Then that cycles back around because, you know, Ohio's lost to Trump. Maybe they don't put money in there. Or if they do put more money in there and they come there and they visit, then it puts heat on Portman. I mean, this is
right.
Just
and the beauty of that catch 22 is that by distancing themselves, they hurt the guy who they actually need to turn out people to help them.
Yep.
But he might not be able to, so I understand why they have to distance themselves, and yet they still might be hurting themselves. The only question is, are they hurting themselves more or less by doing that? And I mean, either way, they're hurt. And we're talking now in races here that in some places that could be won or lost by a couple points, or at least we're going to be won or lost by a couple points. So, you know, I think it puts them in a lot of trouble. And I think, obviously, it turns what was going to be a maybe 5 to 10 to maybe 12 seat Democratic gain in the House to at least a 20 seat gain in the House, probably maybe even more. They need 30 to win back. I'm not ready to say I'm convinced they're going to do that because I still think the Democrats do such a terrible job of recruiting candidates for open seats. But there, I think there are 20 seats or something like that, some big number I can't remember, that are either majority or close to majority Hispanic seats that Republicans hold. You know, at least like 35 to 45% of the seat is of the, you know, district is Hispanic. I mean, you know, an 89% disapproval rating doesn't lie. That makes it very difficult, you know. So I'm not, they're in all sorts of trouble, and I would never predict anything 100%.
Right.
And even the 20% chance or 25% or whatever I'm thinking in my head that Donald Trump could be president is enough to be, you know, mortifying.
Right. It's the 1% doctrine. It's the only time I've adopted that, Dick Cheney's
That's
formulation.
Right. Well, you need to launch a preemptive attack against Donald Trump, is what you're saying.
And
You know, so yeah, I mean, I think he could take them down. I think he'd also tumble a number of the state legislative majorities they've built up. They've been passing all this terrible regressive legislation, including my home state and all the purple states, Wisconsin and, you know, places like Wisconsin and Arizona and Florida and then red states that's been even worse. And frankly, getting some of those guys knocked out of the legislature would be incredibly helpful. Lifelines in some of these places, too. So, you know?
Well,
let's hope.
Yeah. I mean, and then, the other problem is just going to be that it's going to be a if this goes the way that we're imagining, it is going to be the Republican Party is just going to be like even more pure of what it is on some level, because it's just you're boiling it down. It's like when you boil down a stew. All of the stuff evaporates except for the gooey stuff, and the gooey stuff in this instance is going to be the Freedom
Caucus.
Yeah, I really
wonder what the corporate Republicans do. I mean, because a bunch of them can, you know.
Well, they'll have Hillary.
Your Paul Singer types, right? He said he's not supporting Trump. He won't. He's a classic example, right? He's very much in favor of gay marriage and whatever, but he's a huge Republican nonetheless, and terrible on economic and on certain other issues. You know, what do people like that? Because even if he were to choose to support Hillary in the short term over someone like Trump, because it's those are your two choices you have, I wonder what those guys do in the longer term. Because if these are the forces that have taken over their party, they're not going to feel at home in the Democratic Party, which has become increasingly more progressive on economic issues. And so I really do wonder, you know. But then at the same time, if we win all these seats that we would be really excited to win, some of them we are going to win. And again, don't get me wrong, I want to win all of them. Even if it's somebody like Murphy in Florida over the Republican, but then you have Murphy, and then
right.
You have Kirkpatrick, and you've almost the.
But you're also getting
come back into being
right. But you're also getting Feingold. You're also getting. I think he's the best addition, and you're also getting a far more powerful Bernie Sanders. And
Bernie Sanders, and there's a couple others. I'm trying to think who they are right now. It's not coming to me. Besides Feingold, that are quite progressive among the Senate candidates out there, where it wouldn't just be a flip from a Republican to a Democrat. It would be a pretty big leap. But I mean, so yeah, I mean this could be a big deal.
Cliffy, as always, a real pleasure. We'll be in touch next week. It does appear, I got to say, I am now leaning towards not coming to Cleveland for the Republican convention. It's just the expense is not worth it, and we can stay here in the office and mock the Republicans. But we'll get to figure out a way to get you in on that.
I know, and I meant to get you some information there, but you know what?
Yeah.
Not that I know Cleveland that well. My advice to everybody would be to stay the hell away. I'm not going. I'm just telling
Maybe
you.
We'll have Mitt Romney in the office to mock the
speeches.
You know
what you should all do? You should all go see what they've done with the waterfront and the Rock and Roll Museum now before it's destroyed. Because they've done some nice things with Cleveland the past couple of years. But all I got to say to you is I'm 4.5 hours away, and I'm not sure that's far enough.
Yeah.
I'm not going anywhere. I mean, my guess is there will be riots, and my guess is you're going to have some of the open carry nuts show up just because they can, and who the hell knows? Who the hell knows what happens? I think I've got two young boys, and from what I can tell, they'd like me to stick around. So,
well, we would too, Cliff, as always.
Yeah, what would you
buddy?
Do with my song Thanks. If I weren't here? You know what I mean? I mean, it'd just be boring.
Well,
you can't play that song for Michael Brooks. I mean, come on.
Well, what we would do is we would register LibertasLLC.com under his name, and then we would just sort of shift that over. All right, buddy.
I think that's a good idea.
Talk to you later.
All right, take it easy.
Bye.
Bye.
Folks, we're going to play a Jimmy Reefer Cake song, and then we're going to head to the fun half. We've got so much fun today. What is the name of our Jimmy Reefer Cake song of the week, Matt?
My medical card.
My medical card. Is Maine a medical marijuana state now?
I'm getting the idea that it seems like it is.
I know Massachusetts is now, and that's why our website keeps falling apart, because Kyle. And
Hey, me. Just calm down with the updates.
All right, let's... I'm joking, Jimmy. You know that. I don't want to get anybody upset at me. All right, Jimmy Reefer Cake. The song is My Medical Card.
If you drink beer, gin, vodka, whiskey, or wine, then you sure as hell better believe that marijuana's fine. If you drink beer, gin, vodka, whiskey, or wine. Oh, yeah. I hope you live in a state like me. Go on and move to another one if you disagree. Last I checked, this country was supposed to be free. You may as well get a card if you smoke a lot. Medical laws are the best protection you got. Open up my wallet and see what I got.
Everybody sing it together.
I got my medical card. It wasn't that hard. Now I'm operating within the law.
Got my medical card.
It wasn't that hard. Now I'm operating within the law.
I got my medical card.
It wasn't that hard. Now I'm operating within the law.
Got my medical card.
I got my medical card.
Got my medical card.
Got my medical card.
Wow. That's a good one.
Yeah. It sounds like, I mean, I have not confirmed this, but it sounds like he got his medical card. Sounds like he got his marijuana medical card, and
congratulations, Jimmy.
This is a great day. I was wondering because it looked like we got the song like 3 days earlier than we usually get it, and so Jimmy got his medical card. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
And we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. Just a reminder, folks, it is your membership that makes this show possible. If you have the financial means to become a member, we certainly could use your help these days. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. If you drink coffee and you like good coffee and you want to support a great cooperative business that gives a fair wage and price for its coffee throughout the supply chain. Definitely go to justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee to your chocolate. And if you are a customer of jet.com, we now have a link. Go to majorityreportkickback.com, click on the jet.com link, bookmark it, always buy your jet.com stuff through there. We get a kickback. If you're still an Amazon person, same opportunity for you at majorityreportkickback.com. Before we sign off, I mean, we'll talk about this in the fun half, but London apparently has just elected its first Muslim mayor, Sadiq Khan of the Labour Party. He's just been elected mayor. And God, I imagine now that there's a lot of our progressive friends who practice meditation who are not going to want to go to London because of all the horribleness that obviously accrues.
Thought experiment.
Yes. What if I was to, what would I do if I was about to land in London on a jet and all of a sudden I was made aware that the mayor of London was now going to be a Muslim?
Just.
If I did not have enough gas to turn the jet around.
Ideas matter.
All right.
Also, before we sign off, postroll.
Oh, that's right. You know, we were talking about how all these Republicans are going to... all these Republicans are now going to... You know what? I'm in exile. I'm not going to be part of this Republican Party, this conservative movement. I'm a libertarian again. And then they'll change their mind. I mean, it is amazing. Now, part of that is just because there's a lot of money sloshing around there. And God... love to get me some of that. Thank you again to our sponsor, libertarianism.org. Libertarianism.org has hundreds of informative resources to learn about the theories, history, and principles of free societies. There are podcasts, videos, free books, classic reprints, and insights from experts, past and present. Learn more about free and open societies at libertarianism.org. All right, folks. See you in the fun half. 646-257-3920. We'll take the calls.
Imagine I built heaven.